This is the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we have conversations with everyday martial artists about their histories and how martial arts influence their daily lives. You are listening to the abbreviated version of this podcast, which is the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Please consider supporting the show by subscribing on our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MALMAG. And for about the price of one coffee shop coffee per month, you can get access to 4 new podcasts each month, 1 week before their YouTube release dates. You also have access to all of our existing shows, which at this point is about 100 hours of shows for you to enjoy. Individual shows can be purchased at our Gumroad page. That is malmag.gumroad.com. This week I get on Zoom and I talk to South Carolina and I chat with multi-talented martial arts instructor Harun Raja, and we talk about how he got into martial arts. We also talk about how martial arts helped him deal with racism both pre and post 9/11, and how he decided to take on being a martial arts instructor as a vocation. Sit back and enjoy. How are you?
Good evening. I'm better now.
Good. Did you get something to eat?
Yeah.
Good.
I managed to get something in my stomach here. I feel a little bit better now. So.
Yeah. No, I totally understand.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually, I try to, on Sundays I'm off, so I try to put in a run like right before it's time to break the fast. So that by the time I get done with the run, I time it and I can actually hydrate. Yeah. Just to kind of still keep up with the physical fitness of it all, even though I'm fasting.
Right.
And, yeah. So I was like, I just quickly drink something real quick, and now I'm a human being in front of you. So,
yeah, I know it's something that can be. One of my good buddies from University of Miami from college. That's how I actually learned a lot more about Ramadan. So he was from he's from Manchester, England, but his family's from Pakistan. So,
oh sweet,
And I never understood. I just thought, why is Ash sitting outside the dining hall and sitting there looking very hungry in the came in the last minute when I said, what are you doing, buddy? And he said, oh, he goes, it's Ramadan. He goes, and I have to fast. And I said, oh, wow. I said, you're really cutting it close, you know, because they're cutting off food. And so I started telling him, I said, well, you tell me what you want and I'll get you a plate before. Otherwise, what you're having to choose from is such, you know, scraps.
Yeah.
So I figure I could get him something to where, you know, he'd have a choice. But yeah. I always felt bad for him because, you know, Miami's so much more farther south than Manchester, England. So, like, the sundown later, it was like, oh, man.
Yeah, it goes on a lunar calendar. So, every year, the timing of when it's open the fast and when the sunrise part and the sunset part changes. So, there was at one point in time, 2016, I'll never forget, we had an 18-hour fast. Good old South Carolina, hot summer, July. And my academy at that time was nicknamed the Hell Warehouse because we had no AC. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad, man. And so, like, it would probably, the thermostat would say, like, 90 or 95 degrees. But, man, I still had a lot of my guys who would practice the month of Ramadan and kids still come and still train. It was a different breed back then, you know. They would still train. And then, you know, when it was time to break the fast, quickly drink a sip of water, go back, spar, roll, hit the bags, whatever they got to do. And kids included, man. And fast forward now, I got parents who are telling me, oh, yeah, we're just going to go and freeze this month's membership because of Ramadan. So it's like, it's different, man. It was different. But yeah, hardcore.
Hardcore. Well, I saw a video you did about training on that. And I got to tell you, is that your daughter that was kind of dancing around the background there? She's a rock star, let me tell you.
These two are staring at me, wondering who am I talking to right now and why am I not eating with them? Yeah, they hear you. Yeah, that's her. She's in my kids' class. Yeah. I just thought I might quickly do some jump on Facebook. I've been getting a lot of calls about it's easy to a lot of people do, like, different types of fasting, such as like intermittent fasting and water fast and whatnot. But when you're fasting and then you're a martial artist, or when you're fasting and you're an MMA fighter or something like that, it changes the game a little bit, or any athlete for that matter. So there's not much stuff out there up until recently about how people can continue to observe this month of Ramadan, but then still keep up with their physical fitness regimen. And I always get like messages and calls, and I've even done a couple of podcasts at this same time last year and the year before just about this topic. Just because I don't think, A, there's a lot of us out there that are practicing the month of Ramadan and trying to still train, and B,
right.
The nutrition aspect, it could be the month of feasting where people actually gain weight because right. they end up missing the whole point of the month and actually just, when it's green light, just gorging on food that, you know, they shouldn't even gorge on because you just rested your digestive system, you know, clean for 8 to 10 to 15 hours, depending on where you are in the now. You put this poison in you and it's no good. So there's not much research on there out there. And so that whole thing was just because of a lot of questions I was getting.
Well, that's smart. You know, like you said, you know, with the lack of information out there, you know, it's, I think it's a really smart thing to do because, you know, even for religious reasons or not, you know, fasting or this different types of fasting have become quite a, I don't want to say fad because it's not really a fad, but it's becoming popular. Like people are getting into the research of it and understanding benefits of doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
and absolutely.
That, yeah. So lack of information would be good. And especially, you know, if you're doing it for a religious practice and that's probably pretty smart, you know, for
yeah.
people that are of that faith, and then also practicing martial arts as you're doing, you know, it's good for them to have some advice and some information, I think, you know.
Yeah, yes, sir, definitely. I actually, I mean, if it wasn't for Ramadan, me and my wife, we still actually fast. We do the intermittent fasting.
Oh, yeah.
And I do that year-round. So I do that. I at least have to do one of those. And I'll go up to 50 hours at least once a week or once every 2 weeks. It's not as hardcore as the Ramadan one where you can drink water. And for me, I just drink water and black coffee. And I can keep going for more than 24 hours with training. So it's something that we do outside of here. It's just, yeah, it's like you said, it's a lifestyle, really. And Ramadan, of course, is primarily for the people of the Islamic faith to practice that month to observe it. But, you know, that's just something over the years I've just found that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, Ramadan or not. I like the fasting. It really has a lot of medical benefits.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did it a few times because I wanted to experience it and, you know, kind of think about it. And what I found was your first 24 are the hardest. And then the second, after that first day, you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you can put your head down and sleep after doing that first day, you're good. And that sleep that you get is really nice, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. Cool.
I try to kind of figure that out too with my eating. You know, I've changed a lot, especially as I've gotten older, you know, how I eat, because you just can't eat the way I did as a teenager.
Ain't that the truth, man. Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth, man. I wish. Even now, it's like I got a little strict. I can't really kind of cut loose, even though I'm fasting and I'm working out. I still kind of have to stay with the parameters of a healthy diet now that I'm mid to late 30s. So yeah, I gotta diet's a little bit different now.
Yeah, I it's funny because I think you no, I don't think you saw, maybe no, you did see AJ at the the, right? So you know, he's 18 and you know, he's phenomenal, he's good, but he eats like just total garbage. That's all he likes, chicken wings and potato chips. And I'm like,
because AJ, what's diet at 18?
Eat like an athlete, you know?
Yeah, right. Dude, what's a diet at 18, man? There's no such thing. No such thing. No such thing. I wish. 18, man. I don't remember that anymore. Ugh. I wish.
I can see pictures. I look at pictures. I sort of remember, but...
yeah, about... right, yeah. Pictures and just the fact that food was paid for that time.
Exactly.
I was on somebody else's tab. I was on somebody else's grocery bill.
There's that.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, man, I think this is good stuff. I kind of want to actually keep it, you know, in the podcast as opposed to our pre-BS, because I think there's some good info in there. So let me do a quick roll in and we'll just kind of keep going what we're doing. So,
yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're kind of already hearing myself and my guest already talking. And so today I'm welcome to the Martial Art Lifestyle Podcast. And I am connecting on Zoom to South Carolina and connecting with someone I've met a few years back and I thought was just a phenomenal martial artist and a really wonderful person. I you know, from South Carolina, it's Harun Raja. And I really liked your Muay Thai when I first met you. I thought, man, this guy really has some slick Muay Thai.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, when Master Chad threatens you a lot to keep your hands up, you learn to clean up your form real quick.
Yeah, there's that. There's that. That, and the other thing I really like is you're in the tall guy club with me. You know, you can sit there.
Yep. Knees and kicks for days to keep people away.
That's right. That's right. That's why it was kind of fun. I walked over to, you know, you and Sule were working together, and I'm like, hey, all right, I'm going to hang with these guys. We're like the skyscrapers over here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, welcome to the show, my friend. It's really my pleasure to have you on here. I think I'm really going to enjoy sitting and being able to talk with you for a longer period of time than I normally would at any given function. So this will be great.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And it's an honor to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So let's just kind of go to the origins. How did you get involved in martial arts? How and when?
So my late mother was a huge Bruce Lee fan, and she, when she had a son, my fate was sealed, as I say. So I didn't really have much of a choice. We, of all martial arts, stumbled upon a Wing Chun school here in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I mean, you have to really look it up on a map. It's the second biggest city to Greenville in the upstate area or mountainous region of South Carolina. And I was 5 years old, and I stumbled upon a gentleman named Sifu Al Zeta, who is currently one of Sifu Francis Fong's top senior students.
Oh, wow.
And fast forward, he teaches in my school. So it's pretty cool.
Wow, that's great.
So it's like it's full circle. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So he knew my mother, and I trained with him, and mom forced me with him from 5 to like 10. And then like after 10 years old, I slowly started to like it. But before that, it was just, you know, I was going for the sake of just kind of going for, because my mom was forcing me. And then about 12, yeah, she was hardcore. And then about 12 years old, she passed away of cancer. And I continued to train in her legacy. I just kind of made a choice. And I said, you know, okay, now I'm kind of getting the hang of it. I'm growing a little bit taller. She was the cheerleader in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, when it came to pushing me to the martial arts, she's not here. So let me see how far I can go with this. Let me do this kind of in her honor and her legacy. And I started off with him, and that led to what you guys have as legends, but what we back in the early 90s, late 90s, and then early 2000s had called CMAC, which was called Southeast Asian Martial Arts Conference.
Oh, yes.
Fast forward, now it's called Training with the Masters. But back then it was called CMAC, and that's when I was first introduced to Sifu Fong, Ajahn Chai, and Guru Daniel Osano. And that was 02, 03. And I never looked back, man. I said, you know, he was open-minded, and he encouraged me to continue my Wing Chun training with Sifu Fong, who then told me that as lanky and as big as I am, you should look up Master Chai from Muay Thai. And then, you know, that also led me through Guru Dan. I competed in Thai boxing from 15 to about 21, just at an amateur level. Was going to try to go pro, and then I was broke. So I was like, I need to open up a school or do something, because I'm not making any money doing this. And I got 2 or 3, 4 jobs I'm juggling. And I got college tuition. And so started teaching in my dad's garage, like when I was like 21, 22. HOA didn't like that too much, because too many cars were in front of the neighborhood. So then my pops, he said, I tell you what, you're clearly not using your degree, which is a criminal justice degree. And at that time, there was a recession, so I couldn't find any job. And he said, well, let's make this teaching thing work. I'll take a chance on you. And I've got a strip mall. It's got about a 9,000 square foot lot, real small. But we'll go ahead and we'll put you in. I'll be your first landlord, my father talking to me. And if you can make this thing work, then yeah, I'll be off your back. And I won't give you any hassle and tell you to go back to college and be a doctor or engineer or whatever else he wanted me, or everyone else who was doing whatever else they were doing. So yeah, I did that, man. And at 23, I opened up my school, and I never looked back. And now fast forward, it's 15, 16 years in, we've had an academy, and we're doing real well. So,
wow. Well, yeah. First of all, congratulations. I mean, that's an accomplishment. I mean, 15 years.
Thank you.
With the COVID crisis, you know, a lot of people, lost their stuff in that period of time. So, you know, first of all, congratulations on all that.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
What some wonderful parents you have there. That is really great. I mean, your mom sounds just, you know, rest your soul. She sounds like an amazing person.
She was.
That just sounds like he really, you know, stepped up and gave you some support there. That's just really great.
He did. So, yeah, he did. He did. I unfortunately lost both to cancer. I lost my father last year, all of a sudden to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But I could tell you this, that, I had some really good parents. I really did. And now I definitely continue in both of their legacy now. And I'm really blessed.
Yeah. Well, that I think is, you know, a blessing, obviously for your own children, because you have some great role models to follow there. So we know that they probably have good parents then too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
That is amazing. So I need to hear more about your mom being a Bruce Lee fan. That's really interesting, because it's like, you don't really think of the female Bruce Lee fans out there, especially time period. And I mean, had you seen a Bruce Lee movie at age 5? Did she show you one?
No. So my first Bruce Lee movie was a VHS that my dad got. And I remember watching it with him. And he went, he owned a convenience store, and the kind of grocery store for convenience stores before Costco was Sam's Club. And that was a big one that we have on the East Coast here. So he would go there, and of course they'd have these deals and bundles just like Costco has. And right at the front, you know, they're quick to see and easy to pick up and buy, clickbait pretty much. And they had a Bruce Lee they have all 5 movies in VHS. He bought it, and he's like, well, you know, you're doing the martial arts stuff too, so check this out. This is kind of who your mom keeps talking about, and this is kind of the origin of Wing Chun and whatnot. He really didn't know all that, but he was just like, you know, check this guy out. I think it would encourage you more for what you like. And my first introduction to Bruce Lee was 7 years old, not even knowing that the connection that Wing Chun had with Jeet Kune Do and any of that, and how Sifu Al already knew Guru Dan, Master Chai, because we were in this kids class at the end of the day. So it was pretty cool. So that was my first induction. She had a cousin in London. She was born and raised in London to Pakistani parents. As you know, in London, that's the first huge migration from that subcontinent of Asia to any Western country. You'll have a lot more people of Indian Pakistani descent in England than you do here in the United States, because that was much more easier trip than going all the way across the pond.
Yeah, and it was part of the Commonwealth, and I think there was the migration that had to do with medical people, like medical professionals.
No, her dad, my grandfather, after the partitions, when the Britain split up India and Pakistan, they decided to move to England around that time. And he had a job with the British government in some, he always hopped around to some, a lot of odd jobs. So they just kind of raised their family there. And my mom was the second eldest of 5 children. And she had a cousin who had a big influence on her, who was into the Kung Fu and watching Bruce Lee and whatnot. And I think that's kind of what got her into it. She was pretty athletic. I don't think she's ever done martial arts or anything before. It's one of those things, like, had she been alive now, there's so many questions I have. Like, there's so many things I want to talk to her about. So a lot of this is through talking to her siblings, talking to my aunts and uncles, looking at old pictures and stuff like that, and then kind of being able to find more history about really both of my folks through that. That's just kind of how it's been. But yeah, I think that's how she got started. So
that's pretty interesting. So then how did she come to the United States then?
So she married my father, and my father moved to the United States when he was 17. And he grew up, there was a point in time where my grandfather took the family after about 2 or 3 years living in London, had a job change in Pakistan and raised the family a little bit there, and then came back in England. When he had that job change in Pakistan, the street that they were on, my father and his family were all living on the street. So my father and my mother were like high school sweethearts, you could say. Like, they kind of knew each other going to high school and whatnot. And so when he migrated and came to the United States and made a name for himself just in owning a gas station and just owning a business. Mm-hmm. When he went back to visit his folks, My grandfather, as in my mother's father, told him, hey, if you want to make a pit stop in UK, you can because it's a long journey. And, we're looking for someone to be able to marry my daughter, Noreen. And, we know you guys knew each other. Maybe it's a good fit. I already talked to your dad about it. So, we'll let you guys meet. It was more traditional. We come from a traditional background. So it's more traditional. Dating is not a really huge thing. So it's all supervised, but in the sense that if they both agree, then, obviously they'll get married. There's no force or compulsion and anything like that. And they did. And then she taxied along and they got married in 85, I believe. I was born in 86. So yeah, and she came to the United States and we lived in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's actually where I was born.
Wow.
Duke University, of course, everyone knows Duke, right? And then we moved to the Spartanburg, Greenville region when I was five.
Wow. So I'm just of such an interesting culture shock from London to like North South Carolina for your
I
folks.
tell you what, I tell you what. And even I think up until 2004, I think it's safe to say when I graduated high school, we were still like the only brown guys around good old South Carolina, man. I mean, it's like we still stuck out like a sore thumb. You know what I mean? I get confused with Latino American and Mexican, which is obviously a
Sure.
compliment to me. That's cool with me. But
Right.
nobody would ever guess like what we really were. You know what I
Right.
mean? So it is. Yeah, we are now. Fast forward, it's a bigger community here in Greenville.
Right. That's really fascinating. It's interesting. I love migration stories. It's always kind of been an interest of mine in different cultures and people kind of moving, to being fish out of water, so to speak. And I like putting myself into those positions a lot of times too.
Right, and you're a man who's traveled a lot, right? Especially in the Stan countries, kind of where my family's from. I've read a lot of background about you and research you. You've been there for a while, right? You've
Just
traveled.
not, yeah, I was in Central Asia for about 2.5 years.
So you know all about our culture, man.
Well, it's like even as I was kind of talking to you about early on, so that college buddy of mine from Manchester, England. I've been there to visit him a couple times and actually spent a lot of time within the Pakistani community within Manchester. And so it was a lot of fun for me to kind of immerse into.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the podcast. Please consider supporting the program by going to www.patreon.com/MALMAG and subscribing to the show. You can also purchase this individual episode or any individual episode at our Gumroad page. That's MALMAG.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Harun Raja. Coming up next week, I sit down in Beverly Hills with one of my favorite families, the Uchinos. Our Malmag online store at martialartslifestylemagazine.com has a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Krabiker Bong. Timmy B's brand now selling in Japan as well. Beautiful Timmy B's brand shirts and Dos Manos shirts are available with new t-shirt designs and more products coming soon. An online course in the Dos Manos method for FMA is available under the Courses tab. More courses coming soon. Check out the Places to Train tab to find schools near you and click on the events calendar page to see what seminars and events are happening all around the world. And of course, visit our main page for articles on the martial arts. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.